Well, this week is National Library Week, but coming up in about 19 days or so, on April 29th, is Spring Astronomy Day. We're going to celebrate that early today with Paul Kinzer, talking about all things astronomical. Paul is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club and joins us a few times a year to talk about the latest news in astronomy and what we can see in the night skies. You may have some special Astronomy Day events going on in your area. You can tell us about those events. And, of course, you can ask your questions about what's going on in the sky with Paul. So I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And Paul Kinzer, welcome back.
Well, it's good to be here.
How is Spring Astronomy Day celebrated?
Well, all across the country and really even around the world, people who have something to do with astronomy, whether it's observatories, planetaria, museums, or like us in La Crosse area, just an astronomy club, on that day, it's a day that's set aside to really get us out there sharing the night sky and the sun with proper filters with the public, just to get them to look up.
And we have a day in the spring, and then there's a day in the fall.
Yeah, the logic of that is days are getting warmer, but they're also getting longer. So both spring and fall are great times to get out because it gets dark fairly early, stays dark longer than in midsummer, and it's now warm enough to get out there. Winter is really a great time. We have such long nights then, but of course it can be very, very cold.
Yeah. And as you say, there's lots going on Astronomy Day. Well, there's lots going on other days as well. But what's your club doing, for example?
I've worked with our club and my local school district to build a public observatory in a school forest between the towns of Galesville and Ettrick. And we will be out there from 11 to 2 on actually both that Friday, the 28th, and Saturday. Or, depending on the weather, maybe one of those days. That's the thing about astronomy, too. You know, just can't plan for the weather. We'll have solar viewing from 11 to 2 during the day, and then from 7 p.m. on in the evenings on Friday and Saturday, we will open the roof. The roof rolls off the observatory, and there are two fairly large amateur telescopes in there on motorized mounts that will follow the sky as it turns. And we'll look at a lot of things. There's going to be, a very thin crescent moon on that night, and we'll look at that. And Jupiter will rise and other things up in the sky. As we go around the sun each year, every month or so, the sky is quite different.
Yeah.
Different constellations are high in the sky. This time of year, Leo is high up in the sky.
It's always a lot of fun for me because I'm usually up with my run in the morning before it's light out, and so it's that morning's 5 o'clock in the morning or whatever. It's kind of fun to.
Right, and the interesting thing about that is, as the Earth spins, when you're out there at 5 a.m, you're seeing stuff that us evening viewers won't see for several months.
Oh.
As the Earth goes around the sun and spins around, the sky changes.
Well, last time you were with us, you talked about Juno. That's the space probe that's circling Jupiter. Give us a little background on that.
Well, it arrived there last 4th of July, and it's a very different probe. Usually when probes are sent to orbit other planets, and we have had them now orbiting, they've orbited Mercury, Venus, Mars, and Jupiter and Saturn have all had orbiting probes. But they usually go circle or elliptical shapes around the equator, but this has a polar orbit. They're looking at the north and south poles of Jupiter, something that's never really been done. And if you go to the NASA website and do a search for Juno, the pictures of the poles are amazing. The cloud formations are just
spectacular.
They just are. They look abstract. It's very, very strange. And the other thing is, this probe has a very elliptical orbit. At one point in its orbit, it's millions of miles away from Jupiter, but then it gets to within a very short distance, 2,600 miles above the surface. That might seem high. It would be high for an Earth-orbiting satellite, but Jupiter pumps out lots and lots of really nasty radiation. So they have really shielded this probe, and they don't really know how long it's going to last, what's going to happen as it sweeps through there. But as it sweeps through there, it's looking for water, it's checking out other things, trying to look down below the tops of the clouds to find out what makes Jupiter tick.
Yeah. Will it get a chance to check on Jupiter's moons?
No, it's not really meant to do that, and I don't even know if it's going to have the ability to get much of a shot of those in the orbit it's in. It's had some trouble. There's been a malfunction, and they had planned on changing the orbit so it could orbit, I think they were thinking, up to 53 times in a shorter orbit. But because of this malfunction, they've decided to just keep it in the orbit it's in rather than risk anything. And they say they can pretty much get all the science they thought they were going to get anyway.
Yeah. There's also a probe, isn't there, orbiting Saturn?
Right, Cassini.
That's been there for a while, 2004?
2004, that's right. And Juno arrived last year, and Cassini is going to end its mission. I believe the date is September 15th. They don't want either of these probes to eventually run into one of the moons orbiting either Jupiter or Saturn, because there is a chance that some of those moons have life on them. They've found water. One of the moons of Saturn, it actually has geysers with water in them that come up from the surface, and they think there could be subsurface oceans that maybe have some kind of life in them, and they don't want any chance of any tiny little hitchhiker that came from Earth, some tiny virus or bacterium that maybe is riding on Cassini and has somehow survived all this time. They don't want it to get on any of those moons. So both Juno and Cassini, the plan is to have them dive into the atmosphere of those planets, and anything alive there will be destroyed because the satellites will be crushed and burned as they go down. But before Cassini does that, they're doing some much riskier stuff with it than they've done up till now. It's been taking pictures of the rings and the moons and Saturn itself for 13 years now, and now they're going to, in fact, I think next week, they're going to put it in a new type of orbit where, sort of like Juno, at one point of its orbit, it's going to get very close to Saturn. In fact, it's going to go between the rings and the planet.
Oh.
And it's going to do that, I think, 22 times before September 15th to really study closer up the rings and the planet.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You wonder if it's if there'd be collisions and so forth. What are the rings made of?
The rings, they're made primarily of ice. Since we really started going out there and looking around, there's a lot more water. It seems to be water almost everywhere. When I found out there was water on the moon, that blew me away. But yeah, mostly ice and particles from ice cube size to bigger than a house. But even a house, that's very small when they're spread out over that huge, huge area.
Wow. Talking with Paul Kinzer today about Spring Astronomy Day and about what's going on in the night sky, you can join in too at 800-642-1234. Give us a call or email us at talk@ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. What planets will you be able to see in the night sky this spring and into the summer?
Well, Jupiter is rising right now in the evening sky and will stay up most of the night. And it's going to be out all summer, although by the late summer it will be setting early. Saturn, it's not rising until fairly late now, but later on in the spring, it's rising earlier every night. And again, it too will be out all summer. And the nice thing about where Saturn is in the sky right now, it's passing in front of the Milky Way. So if the Milky Way is up in the sky and you're out in the country, you'll get to see a bright yellow, looks like a star, right in amongst the bright stars of the Milky Way. It'll be passing through the constellation Sagittarius. And in the direction of Sagittarius is the center of our own galaxy, the Milky Way, and Saturn is very close to that now. Now, what that means, though, is that it'll be pretty low in the sky. It never gets very high up in the sky. Whenever a planet is out during the summer, just because of the way the solar system works, they're pretty low in the sky. Still, they'll be there, and you can see the rings of Saturn through even a very small telescope.
Yeah. What size would you need?
really any telescope that is designed for astronomy, and maybe some that aren't. The first time I saw the rings, it was through a Nikon spotting scope meant for birds, and it had a zoom eyepiece. And when I zoomed out to its highest power, 45 magnifications, there they were. It was very tiny, but it was very sharp and bright, and the rings were very apparent.
Oh, as compared to the telescopes you have at your in your club.
Right. With those telescopes, we can... Jupiter will still look small. It's a billion miles away. But with those telescopes, we'll be able to see several of its moons. But even a small telescope will show you Titan, Saturn's largest moon and the only moon in the solar system with an atmosphere. That's one of the moons they don't want Cassini to hit. Yeah,
because that one's got the geysers and so forth.
Right. The thing about it is, we actually landed a probe on Titan. This talk about life has grown a lot since Titan had Cassini arrive in 2004. But a probe, Huygens, parachuted down through the atmosphere of Titan, and of course, all of the other moons in the solar system, you couldn't use a parachute because there's no atmosphere, and it would just crash. But learned a bunch on its way down through the atmosphere. And if you do see Saturn through a telescope, remember it's there.
And we'll talk about what they may have found and a whole lot more with our guest today, Paul Kinzer. We'll take a quick look at the news, then we'll be back with Paul. Stay with us. There will be a total eclipse of the sun in August. We're going to be talking about that with our guest today, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Paul Kinzer, our guest in the studio with me, is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, and a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. And he'll talk with us about the eclipse and answer all your astronomy questions. I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've got something, an experience to share as well. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Bruce and Phillips up with a call, so let's go to Bruce. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Paul and Larry.
Hi.
Yeah, no, I just this winter we've noticed, and I'm sure it's Venus out there in the western sky so bright, and seemed like we've noticed it more this last month or so than ever. So I assume that's what it is, or am I correct in that?
Venus was in the evening sky this winter, but Venus takes less than our year to go around the sun, and Venus is actually no longer, or if it is, I don't think it is in the evening sky anymore. Now, rising in the east just as it gets dark, is Jupiter.
Okay.
It's Jupiter.
Okay.
But in the western sky, you're right, Venus. And Venus is the closest planet to the Earth, and it's covered with white clouds, so it is a very, very bright evening star or morning star, that's what we call it. And if it hasn't gone around the sun, it's going to very, very soon.
Okay, so I admit I haven't noticed it recently, just
right.
I know during the winter here.
Yep.
So it would have been what I had seen, let's say, a month ago or so, probably.
Correct, yep.
Yep.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate the call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you. You have posted, you sent a photo of one of the last partial eclipse of the sun.
Yeah, I took that picture. I could have taken it here, but I went to South Dakota because the chance of clouds was lower there, and I lucked out and there it was. But if you do look at that picture, it looks like, you know, it's the shape of a crescent moon, but that's only because the sun has the moon passing in front of it. And it's just a very odd coincidence that in our sky, the moon and the sun appear to be almost exactly the same size. That's because the moon is about 1/400th the diameter of the sun, and it's about 400 times closer to us, and that's just the way it works out. But in August, something's going to happen that hasn't happened in the United States in 99 years. There's going to be a total solar eclipse that crosses the entire United States from the Pacific to the Atlantic Ocean around 10:20 in the morning. It won't be a total solar eclipse in Wisconsin. You'd have to go to southern Illinois to see that. I and my son are going to go to Oregon because that is the place, Central Oregon, where the chance of clear skies that day is the highest in the country. I've never seen one, and I've been waiting for this exact eclipse since I was a little kid. I saw a book that had a map showing all the total eclipses for the next 100 years, and I looked and I looked and I went, there's not going to be one here until I'm 56 years old. And hey, I am now 56 years old, so we're going to go.
And you commented that it is a total eclipse is so much different from a partial.
Right. Even if only 99% of the sun is covered, it still looks like daylight. The sun is very, very bright, but once the moon completely covers the sun, and I've never seen one, but I've done so much reading, especially lately, about it, people who see it say you can't describe how awesome it is. And I don't use the word awesome except for things like this. It truly is awesome. It's inspiring of awe. It gets dark. You can see stars. The birds stop tweeting. If you're in the right spot, you can see the shadow of the moon streaking towards you at almost 1,000 miles an hour. It is wow. And I keep reading things that I'm like, wait, what's that all about? And I feel like there hasn't been anyone who's really, really written about it, because when you're in the midst of it, you know it's only going to last. This one isn't going to last more than 2.5 minutes or so. And the longest one can last is about 7. So you're just sort of dumbstruck. So
what are you going to do during that time? Are you just going to take it in?
Well, there are some people who've been to a lot of these who say, for your first one, you shouldn't take any pictures. You shouldn't plan on it. Just experience it. And I'm like, well, that's easy for you to say. We've seen a whole bunch of them. I've never seen one. I will have a telescope set up, aimed, and I will have it fairly programmed, so I don't need to use much of my brain to get it to do what I want, but to take a series of photos. But I'm only going to do that for maybe 30 seconds, and then the next minute and a half, I'm just going to look around and just experience it. And I may be among a large crowd. There's a town called Madras in Oregon that's really preparing for it, and they have a website. They said that on that day, they will have the highest per capita porta-potties anywhere in the state, because they're expecting many, many thousands of people.
Oh, and it'll be pretty cool to be there with all these other people as well.
And I read recently they're thinking this may, because of everybody's phones being their cameras now, this may be the most photographed event in history.
Wow.
Yeah.
Paul Kinzer, our guest, and I hope you go to our Facebook page. Take a look at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, because on it, under the program topic, we've got the photo that Paul took during the partial eclipse. It is really striking.
Yeah. And if you went to my website, there's probably a larger version of it that you can click on and zoom in on it. There was, on that day, there was a huge sunspot system. A sunspot is a magnetic storm on the sun. And it just happened that at the peak of the partial solar eclipse, the edge of the moon was just about touching that sunspot. It's a really neat thing.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I'll just give my website now since I mentioned it. It's seeingstarswi.wordpress.com. Kind of a mouthful. If you did a search for my last name, Kinzer, K-I-N-Z-E-R, and Seeing Stars, that would get you there. And there's other pictures there too, including pictures of the inside of that observatory where we're going to have our event.
Yeah, and we have a link on our Facebook page as well at the Larry Mueller Show. I'm pretty sure Joe put one up, linking to your page. So, all things considered, if you can't find it anywhere else, go to our Facebook page. Nathan in Honey Creek, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm going back to the previous caller who was talking about Venus. I have a puppy, and about maybe a month ago, I have to take him outside a lot. This is during the day, probably 1:30 in the afternoon or so. And, I take him outside. I'm in the shadow of my house, and I look up my house and into the sky, and I see a star, and it's blue sky. And I call my father. He's about 10 miles south of me, but we're on a direct line. And after about 5 minutes of searching, he was able to find it. And we're watching the clouds go over this, and it's, it's getting stronger. You can see it plain as day. And I called the UW Astronomy Lab and found out that it was Venus, and I was able to sight it during the daytime, and I had never realized that, you know, that was even possible.
That's cool.
Yeah, that is cool, and you have good eyes. Yeah, it is visible. Jupiter is also visible during the day. I've seen them during the day, but either I was looking at them at night and just kept my telescope or my eyes aimed there as it got lighter, or I knew, say, they were right next to the crescent moon, which, of course, you can also see during the day. But to find it just in the clear sky, that's pretty neat.
That's pretty cool.
Now, it is pretty, like I said,
it was so bright when the clouds would go over it, I could see it through the clouds.
Right.
Yeah.
When it is at the place where it is right now, where it's closest to Earth, that's, even though if you looked at it through a telescope during the day, you would see a thin crescent Venus right now. But that crescent, since it's so close to us, is very, very, very bright.
Yeah. Very cool. Thank you, Nathan. Yeah, appreciate it very much. Let's see, Kathy in Denmark, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you for taking this call.
Sure.
A couple of years ago, I had read in the book, The Heartbeat of the Sun, that there was going to be a transit of Venus, and I had never heard of anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband put together 5 layers of welding glass for me, and I could actually stand in my driveway and watch that little black dot.
Yeah, cool.
Yep. The sun. Now, does that happen very often?
It does not, and it's very strange. It happens in pairs that are 8 years apart. There was one in 2004. And then there was one in 2012, but now the next pair, the first one of the next pair, will be in the year 2117.
Oh.
So 100 years from now.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm 70, so I'll never get to that one.
Yep. Yeah. And
So I was lucky.
Oh.
Yep. And that, again, was a very, very photographed thing. I took pictures. I actually went to Arizona to the Kitt Peak Observatory to see the last transit of Venus. They invited me to come up there if I was willing to share my knowledge about taking pictures, and I was happy to do it.
Very cool, for sure.
Well, I was absolutely thrilled, so thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Kathy. Appreciate that call. And you got a pretty good husband there, too. He welded together.
Yeah. I will say, you actually, if you use some quite dark welding glass, just one layer is enough to look at the sun. You don't ever want to look at the sun with your bare eyes, but using a welding mask, it is okay to do.
Matt in Eagle River, your turn now. Hi, Matt.
Hey. I was calling to ask how your guest knew that Oregon was going to be the best place or chances of clear skies during that eclipse, because I was thinking of perhaps running out from Eagle River to Nebraska or something.
Right.
How did he find that information out?
There's a book, and I am not remembering the title. I think it's just called The 2017 Solar Eclipse. It's by a man named Fred Espanak, Espanak, I believe, or it might be Enak. And he's known as Mystery Eclipse. He's seen many, many eclipses, and this is a very, very detailed book. But you can find this information online, too, if you just do 2017 solar eclipse web search. There's so much out there. I'm choosing Oregon, and especially and one part of Oregon, once you're past the Cascade Range to the east. A lot of people think Oregon is, you know, a cloudy rainforest, but when you get into the eastern two-thirds, really, of Oregon, it's almost a desert. And climactically, that spot or that little bit along the path of the eclipse on that day, that is the part of the country that is most likely to be sunny. Doesn't mean it will be sunny. So I will, 2 days before the eclipse, I'll be somewhere out that way. And if they say it's going to be cloudy there but clear in Nebraska, I will be driving. Yeah.
I'm looking at the Beatrice area, so thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, thanks a lot.
And actually, western, I don't know where Beatrice is, but western Nebraska is supposed to be pretty good shot at it, too. I'm much closer than Oregon.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. And Tom in Greenwood, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, gentlemen, question for you. My wife and I are just casual astronomers, and we found out about this light park. It's actually up in, it's not in the UP. You go across the Mackinac Bridge, and it's in Mackinac, up, well, I should say northern Michigan, not Mackinac City. It's just outside of that, across the Mackinac Bridge. And we're going to just try to see the Northern Lights this summer from there. I guess my question is, we've been on the website for these light parks, and there's no other ones anywhere near us. And I'm wondering why Wisconsin doesn't have any, maybe by Ashland or somewhere where there's a good view, you know, and it's or Lake Michigan, Door County, something like that. Any thoughts on that?
Well, anywhere where there aren't lights is a great place to do astronomy. And if they, it sounds like, I haven't heard of this, but it sounds like they've made an effort to make sure that an area is dark, that there are no lights. If you're in the Apostle Islands, I know we were there a couple of years ago, and they even had some postcards. Some astronomers came there and took pictures of the Milky Way near one of the lighthouses. Anywhere you can get that's away from lights is going to be great. And we do have lots of dark skies in Wisconsin, not as dark as I'd like. We could probably spend an hour talking about it. We just got new lights in my little town that I am not happy with. They're LEDs, and they claim that they're less harmful to the night sky, and I don't believe them. But the national parks, they are getting much, much more involved, because dark skies are part of our heritage. And to destroy them, to me, is not just aesthetically a bad idea, economically and health-wise. It's just not a smart thing to do. Our lights at night are too bright.
And I, having a place in with some friends in Bayfield, County, and the Shawamigan National Forest is a great place to go at night, because there are no buildings and there are no towns that are close, and it is really dark.
Right. If you go to a website, and I believe it's just cleardarksky.com, that's where amateur astronomers can register their own observing site. With this man in Canada who will give you a weather forecast for astronomy over the next 36 hours. But he also has links to maps of light pollution in the United States and parts of Canada. And that's, you can find where things are really dark, a very, very dark place, one of the darkest that's very close to us other than in the middle of a Great Lake, is central Nebraska in the Sandhills. It's so dark there that I could read by starlight, not moonlight, starlight, because your eyes are able to get used to the total darkness out there.
Wow, that is something.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. Lynn in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Larry. This is exciting for me. I just came in from California last night, and while out there, my son has a huge, I guess, a refracting telescope. And I got to see Jupiter.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it was a billion miles away, so now it's even more special to me.
Well,
and I also looked at the moon, and it was so bright. It was almost blinding.
Yeah, you need a filter to look at the moon. Yep.
It was great.
Yeah.
But when I was a child, I grew up in Midlothian, Illinois, about 15 miles south of Chicago, and we could stand on our front porch and watch the Northern Lights.
Yeah.
And it breaks my heart that my kids and my grandkids probably will never experience that.
Yeah, and sadly, Chicago, I don't know why, they're not the largest city, but they're the worst city in the country for light pollution. Downtown Chicago on a given night, it isn't the Northern Lights. You can't see a single star from downtown. It's so bright. I do want to say, though, it's Saturn. That's a billion miles away. Jupiter is about half a billion. Just a half a billion miles away.
Oh, just a half a billion?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go, Lynn. Thanks a lot for calling. Doug in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hi, yeah. Well, it looks like I'm calling it an apropos time. I'd like to encourage communities in Wisconsin to pass dark sky ordinances. And we have one here in the town of Perry in southwestern Dane County. It's only about 20 miles out of Madison. It covers all 36 square miles of our township. And the ordinance, if anyone is interested, is on the town of Perry website. You can just look up the town of Perry, Dane County. And it's a pretty simple ordinance. It just says, if you're building something in the town, you need to put a dark sky rated light on it. And if you have a structure that's already built, You can keep the one you have until it fails, and then you have to replace it with a dark sky rated light. And from our town, you can see the Milky Way, and we watch the International Space Station going by, and we can see satellite flares, sun bouncing off the satellites, and it's fairly dark, but because of that ordinance, it's going to stay that way.
That's great. Yeah,
that's great. Thank you so much.
And if you want to find out a lot more about light pollution and what people can do about it, the International Dark Skies Association, the IDA, they call themselves, if you just Google search that, International Dark Skies, they have all sorts of, they have model ordinances and other things that you can look at there.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Doug. Appreciate it very much. I want to give Clint in Duluth, Minnesota, a chance to join us. Hi, Clint.
Oh, good morning or afternoon. I just wanted to relate my total eclipse experience was we went to Bhutan for a service, and the capital, Thimphu, we could not find a place to stay, and we didn't know why. We did finally find a place, and the next morning we got up, and it happened. The valley is quite deep, and just as you described, it got dark. The birds just started circling around. The dogs, likewise. It was very, very eerie and spooky.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
man.
It was a total eclipse.
Yeah.
And you saw it by chance, Clint.
By chance.
Yeah.
It was such a thrill to be in a place like Bhutan to begin with, and then to have that thrown on top.
Wow.
A very good highlight to a well-lived life.
Man, you got that right. Thank you, Clint. Oh, man, what a great experience.
Yeah, I wish.
Janice in Milwaukee, hi.
Hello. I just want to tell you that there is a Bob Bonador, who is the director of the planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum.
Yep.
Is getting together a trip. He's going to lead a bus trip, go through Illinois, make some interesting stops, and go to Jefferson City to see the total eclipse.
Great.
So if people want to get on his tour, he's just, you know, asking people if they want to, you know, join him. Contact the planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And he used to be at the...
Get over there. It's an interesting trip. And that's how people from here can go on a trip and see this.
Yeah.
Yep. And I've heard of him. He used to be at the Minneapolis Planetarium. When they had one.
Well, here we are completely out of time.
Yeah.
Boy, did it fly by.
Yes, it did.
So when's that total eclipse?
That is on August 21st, and depending on the time zone you're in, you'll have to check the exact time, but it'll be in the morning. And, of course, the partial phase lasts quite a while, but the total phase where it's completely covering it will be at the longest about 2 minutes and 40 seconds. So you need to
be ready.
Be ready and put down that cup of coffee.
Well, Paul, if we don't have you on before then, we'll certainly have you on right after.
Yeah, okay.
Talk
I'll
about
share
your
some pictures, yeah.
Paul Kinzer, our guest today, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. Great to have him with us. He'll be back, and we'll certainly talk with him again. Tomorrow we'll take a look at brain tumors and brain cancer with our guests. Stay with us.